Are you prepared to bug out? Infidel Body Armor and an Army Ranger have produced a high-speed DVD and book to show you how to drive in combat, patrol, and how to survive in combat. Skills you'll need when it hits the fan. Go to DrivenDVD.com. DrivenDVD.com.
You've made a serious investment in protecting yourself and your family. You've purchased the gun, the ammunition, the training, and even secured a license to carry in your state. You know the Constitution and don't believe you should have to pay for a right that you already have as written in the Second Amendment, but you are law-abiding. Now you are considering the legal defense options you should have if you ever have to use a firearm. Self-Defense Fund is a comprehensive litigation membership backing you on appeals, legal expenses, court costs, and more. Up to $1 million per incident and unlimited attorney costs per member. Discover selfdefensefund.com for yourself. Any weapon, any state, any time.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Herbs have been used by people since the dawn of time. When Rockefeller introduced allopathic medicine, many herbal remedies fell by the wayside as people put their faith in prescription pills and the world just gets sicker. Here at Heathen Herbs, we look to the past and to nature for answers. We offer tinctures, magnesium skin cream, lip balm, tooth powder, colloidal silver throat spray, and more. Check us out at heathenherbs.com.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Last week, I spoke to you about the anti-white hatred that culminated in the slaughter of every last white man, woman, and child in the country of Haiti, and how that same hatred is being stoked by the controlled media and the captured government of the United States today. And I warned you that we are headed for the same kind of slaughter if we do nothing. And I have spoken to you many times on American Dissident Voices about the control of the media by and the domination of American politics by a Jewish minority which has decided to eliminate white people from the face of the earth after impoverishing us, taking everything we ever had or created away from us, and making us utterly incapable of defending ourselves. Once you understand the anti-white agenda, and once you understand that it is above all else a Jewish agenda with a lot of non-Jewish hangers-on and employees, everything will become clear to you. You'll understand why little children are being encouraged to identify as the wrong sex and then grotesquely mutilate their bodies. To reduce the white birth rate, of course. You'll understand why homosexuality and sexual perversion of an ever-increasing diversity of kind is being pushed by all the bot politicians and in all of the billionaires' media and by all the ultra-wealthy corporations. To reduce the white birth rate, of course. You'll understand why these same institutions and individuals will accept nothing less than totally open borders. To replace whites with non-whites, of course. You'll understand why horrific, racially motivated, violent crimes against white people, including murder after murder after murder, day after day, year after year, are hushed up except for local coverage, and why sometimes the perpetrators are even let go. And you'll understand why whites who merely say something that mildly disagrees with the anti-white agenda or who faintly criticize the third worlding of America are the subject of rabid hate in the national media that sometimes lasts for months. Doxing, job loss, and even criminal prosecution in order to intimidate whites into silence in the face of a real and ongoing genocide, and to keep as many whites ignorant of how they are being genocided for as long as possible. Long enough, the Jews hope, to make any effective resistance impossible. That's why. Whites getting killed. And CNN and CBS and NBC and the rest of them, just crickets. Whites saying that nice white neighborhoods are a good thing, or criticizing Black Lives Matter rioters in even the slightest way, and it's a national story with the whites the bad guys for weeks and weeks, with no dissident white being allowed to keep his job or business if the Jewish media can help it. Yes. Once you understand the reality of the anti-white agenda and its Jewish string pullers, everything becomes crystal clear. But even those of us who understand that reality might not understand how the Jews' power structure became so dominant. Why, for example, do they pull the strings instead of us here in America? After all, we whites are still 60% of the population, and they are just 2 or 3%. The answer has several parts. One reason is that the Jews are organized racially, and we are not. Another is that we have accepted a false, inverted morality that tells us it is somehow wrong for us to be organized racially and to stand up for our interests or even our survival. An inverted morality which says that it is morally superior for us to accept our own demise than to even identify as a race or a people, much less actually trying to survive. And we must solve this moral problem, because if we don't, we are dead. Our children are dead, and everything we could ever be or do is dead. Let's also look at yet another reason why the Jews are strong enough to be such a deadly threat to our people. And that reason is their power of money. Jews dominate the world of money in America. We have documented here that about 72% of the executive management of the Fed and of Wall Street banks and hedge funds and the regulatory agencies that are supposed to protect us from Wall Street, are comprised of Jews, more than 3,000% higher than their proportion of the population. When low interest, or these days no interest or negative interest money, is created by the Fed and by the banking system in the trillions upon trillions of dollars and at an ever-accelerating rate, who do you think gets this money first, before it is invested and marked up and loan-sharked to the suckers further down the line? The people who are first in line for the newly created money, especially the bankers who create it to begin with and their close associates, increase their wealth tremendously. One, because they get the money before prices are bid up by the market. And two, they get it at near zero cost. Who wouldn't want to invest in 100, 1,000 different schemes, some of which will surely pay off big time, if the money is essentially free? Ordinary citizens never used to have such windfalls. And the stimulus money we've gotten recently is just a tiny eyedropper's worth compared to the ocean of dollars that the banks and major corporations that are in bed with them and the NGOs they fund have been awash in for many, many decades. This getting the money cheap and getting the money first is called the Cantillon effect, from the 18th century French economist who first described an early version of the phenomenon. One small example of what these self-styled elites do with the power their money confers is deny dissident whites like the National Alliance and the Cosmotheist Church access to their money and credit system, so we can't sell online. We have been denied the right to access their credit card processing network some 20 times now in the last few years, each time with a supposedly different independent firm. But all these independent credit card processors all have the exact same policy for some strange reason. If you criticize the Jewish power structure and its anti-white agenda, you are denied service. Most interestingly, these politically motivated denial of service decisions taken by all these quote-unquote independent firms all started to take place in 2017, when the fake narrative about James Alex Fields being a murderer was created and pushed by the media, and tragically was successfully pushed into our corrupt court system too. You'd almost think that our free press and banking and financial services firms were all owned by the same crowd. Now that couldn't be true, could it? We've been able to keep selling books online because, one, we have a very determined and smart team, and two, we use postal mail and cryptocurrency for payments. Cash and cash alternatives like money orders and personal checks haven't been attacked or corralled yet by our enemies, though they may be. And it's unlikely that cryptocurrency ever will be, fully, especially since Bitcoin was intentionally designed to be a permissionless payment system that validates transactions regardless of the political status of the payee or recipient. Boy, do they hate that. Our enemies literally salivate when they think about denying the right to property, wealth, energy, and free transactions to those they hate, like racially conscious whites and others. You didn't think they'd stop with credit card processors, did you? Oh, no. No way. They've been creating a whole new way to control you and deny you money and financial services while you were sleeping or watching TikTok dance videos. It's called ESG, which stands for Environmental, Social, Governance. In many ways, it resembles Communist China's social credit score that is given to every citizen and determines how he is regarded and treated by the regime and its affiliated capitalist businesses. Love the party and its agenda? Increase your score. Criticize the people with power and money? Crater your score. Long before you ever heard of ESG, it was adopted by major businesses and financial firms. Many, perhaps most of them now, have ESG sections on their websites and in their corporate reports. And more sinister, they also have ESG criteria they pledge to use when deciding with whom and on what terms they will do business. If you read these ESG pages and reports, it all sounds very much like feel-good altruism and corporations starting to be responsible for the environment and such. And that's how they're selling it. But if you think that the hedge fund vultures and Jewish leveraged buyout kings who just finished deindustrializing America and outsourcing your job to slave labor in Asia are concerned with morality and the environment, you are very gullible indeed. Wikipedia says of ESG, quote, "Environmental, social, and corporate governance, ESG, data refers to metrics related to intangible assets within the enterprise. Research shows that intangible assets comprise an increasing percentage of future enterprise value. While there are many ways to think of intangible asset metrics, these three central factors together, ESG, comprise a label that has been adopted throughout the United States financial industry. They are used for a myriad of specific purposes with the ultimate objective of measuring elements related to sustainability and societal impact of a company or business. In the 1970s, the worldwide abhorrence of the apartheid regime in South Africa led to one of the most renowned examples of selective disinvestment along ethical lines. As a response to a growing call for sanctions against the regime, the Reverend Leon Sullivan, a board member of General Motors in the United States, drew up a code of conduct in 1971 for practicing business with South Africa. What became known as the Sullivan Principles attracted a great deal of attention, and several reports were commissioned by the government to examine how many U.S. companies were investing in South African companies that were contravening the Sullivan Code. The conclusions of the reports led to a mass disinvestment by the U.S. from many South African companies. The resulting pressure applied to the South African regime by its business community added great weight to the growing impetus for the system of apartheid to be abandoned. Diversity. There is a growing belief that the broader the pool of talent open to an employer, the greater the chance of finding the optimum person for the job. Innovation and agility are seen as the great benefits of diversity, and there is an increasing awareness of what has come to be known as the power of difference." Close quote. They also include metrics that would sound very good to anyone, like protecting the natural environment. But I believe that's a bunch of hypocritical nonsense to be used selectively against anyone who steps out of line. For example, when Elon Musk recently said Tesla was going to accept payment in Bitcoin, he got a phone call from Larry Fink, the Jewish boss at BlackRock, the world's largest hedge fund, and a major Tesla shareholder. Larry Fink said that Musk's support of Bitcoin was problematic from an ESG perspective, specifically an environmental perspective, since Bitcoin uses a lot of computing power, and hence a lot of energy, to make its network secure. That's pretty rich, coming from the head predator at the Wall Street Predators Ball. Even ignoring the fact that American banks use more energy than Bitcoin, as do Americans' Christmas lights every year, it strains credulity to the breaking point to think that BlackRock, or its bosses, or its many minions, actually care about our natural environment. ESG is just a weapon to them, useful to get what they want and to punish those who get out of line. Musk quickly got back into line. They're so far ahead of the general public's awareness on this ESG project that there are already multiple ESG ratings firms in existence. It's a business sector in itself, as is the new field full of divisions, newly minted VPs, and startups of making sure your business keeps in line and gets the highest score possible. Can this be politicized? It already is. The Bank of America famously went through their customers' accounts to help the government find people who traveled to Washington, D.C. on 6 January this year. They got an increased ESG score for that public service. What's next? And who voted for any of this? And who decides what actions are good and increase your score, and what actions are bad? Ultimately, these scores will be applied to small businesses and families and individuals, and will be used to determine your access to a lot more than just credit card processing. The Jewish power structure would like to severely limit the amount of energy of all kinds that we, their servants, are allowed to consume in return for washing their cars and building their mansions, etc. Crypto disrupts their ability to control this, and that is beginning to anger them. Ultimately, it will enrage them. I do hope that the new free financial system will be so entrenched by that time that their rage will be futile. The playing field will be different then. The Jews will still have huge power, but there is a good chance that the wildly disproportionate flow of funds to and through them will be significantly reduced. And a new powerful class will arise, early adopters, and we do not yet know to what extent they will have any coherent agenda and what, if it exists, it will be. Far more important than the financial system and ESG, though, is the moral system, the spiritual and moral values that undergird what people and governments and businesses and societies do. Fix our notions of what is good and what is bad, what is moral and what is evil, and everything changes. Fix that, and we could live with ESGs and social credit scores just fine. In fact, these currently quite evil and tyrannical things might turn into good, positive, liberating things. Imagine if predatory Jews were not allowed to receive credit of any kind. In fact, were not permitted to engage in financial transactions of any kind until such time as their permanent relocation was irrevocably arranged. Imagine if anyone who promoted racial mixing or defilement of our women were instantly denied all financial services so long as he had failed to remove himself from our society. Imagine a society in which service to the race and the race's future would be generously rewarded, as it should be. And all that would be just the beginning of what could be done. With the right moral values, all this becomes possible. The National Alliance, and only the National Alliance, is working for the day when new moral and spiritual values will triumph, and our society will be remade right from the ground up. It can't be done any other way.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
My brothers, my sisters, I bring you a message of solidarity, a call to action, and a demand for adherence to duty of an Aryan resurgence and ultimately total Aryan victory. We have broken the chains of Jewish thought. we know not the meaning of the word mine, it is ours. Our race, the totality of our people. 10 hearts, 1 beat. 100 hearts, 1 beat. 10,000 hearts, 1 beat. We are born to fight and to die and to continue the flow. The flow of our people. Onward we will go, onward to the stars, high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. So kinsmen, duty calls. The future is now. If months from now you have not yet fully committed yourself to the alliance, then you have in effect not only betrayed your race, you have betrayed yourself. So stand up like men and drive the enemy into the sea. Stand up like men and swear a sacred oath upon the green graves of our sires that you will reclaim what our forefathers discovered, explored, conquered, settled, built, and died for. Stand up like men and reclaim our soil. Kinsmen, arise. Look towards the stars and proclaim our destiny. Defeat never, victory forever.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
I believe in race. I'm not ashamed to admit it at all. And that doesn't mean one bit that I'm out to persecute or hurt any man because of his race. He can't help what race he is. We believe that each race has particular geniuses and particular faults. The white race has built white Western civilization, and we think the white race should dominate in that area. National socialism, fundamentally, is the application of science not only to inanimate objects and animals, but to mankind himself. We believe that the communists, the Marxists, have one fatal error in their doctrine, a place where absolutely there's a hole and there's no explanation for it. They admit evolution. They admit that animals vary by breed and that you can breed better and worse animals. Now, how do they explain how there is a sudden dividing line when you come to one particular animal called man? They have no explanation. Time and again, when I've asked them, they have no explanation. They just say, if it's got two legs and it stands on its hind feet, then it suddenly becomes a special being and there is absolute equality. They're all the same. Man is an animal just like all the rest of the animals. He's more intelligent, but he must obey nature's laws. And that insofar as he is an animal, he must obey the laws that pertain to animals. We say that when the white race has produced such a wonderful thing as Western civilization, we should treasure the people that have produced that and can maintain it. And we should not mix them all up with other kinds of civilizations, whether or not they're good. We should certainly try to preserve it just the way the farmer preserves his better grade of stock. We are also, socially speaking, tribalists. You must live as social beings. You have to live with other people. And this is impossible unless you observe certain fundamental laws of the tribe, the ancient Indian tribe, any kind of tribe of people, even a wolf pack, has got to have certain fundamental things. One of these things is leadership. Not leadership by the most popular, but by the strongest and the best. Any tribe or Indian tribe or any group or family should be led by the best and the strongest. Otherwise, it disintegrates. It's got to have group pride and loyalty. You've got to have selection in the mating process, something that we have almost lost now. We believe that it is of fundamental importance to society that the strongest, cleverest, and the best of the men mate with the best type of women who will make good mothers. And when you destroy that machinery, you get what we have now. We believe that you have got to have an organic society. Now, by an organic society, we mean a society, not a dictatorship, but a society in which the parts of the society cooperate together in different functions and in peace and harmony, just the way your body works. Cancer is the wild, uncontrolled growth of cells at the expense of all the rest of the body, and that's what you have in Washington, D.C. right now. Cancer. We believe in private property and free enterprise. It is impossible, we believe, to have a society in which there is any real work going on unless people can get the reward of their effort. And at the same time, we believe you've got to have social justice. You cannot have people who are exploiting and squeezing little helpless people economically. And this is where I get in trouble with the conservatives, because most of today's conservatives, I've discovered, are reactionaries. They're real anxious to hold on to their money. They don't care how they have to figure it out. They just want those money bags. And they come up with any kind of rationale to keep it. Every national socialist believes in idealism, believes in something that is worth more than his own one single human life. He's willing to die for something. When you're ready to die for something, then you're alive. And until you are ready to die for something, you have no real fanaticism. And just to dinner a little while ago with some of the fellows there, they said, were telling me, well, it's terrible to be a fanatic. Well, did you ever stop and think how this country got here? How all the great inventions ever got there? Any one of you out there that is not a fanatic on something or other, whatever it is you're studying, if you're going to be a doctor, be a fanatical doctor. Otherwise, you'll be nothing. You'll just be an ordinary old chug-chugging guy, and when you die, nobody will notice it. But if you're a fanatic, you'll produce something great. You'll create. Creativity is fanaticism. Every creative genius has had to be a fanatic. Many of them have been burned at the stake. So we are ideological and idealistic fanatics. Just like the communists, by the way. In between the Nazis and the communists is the great mass of non-fanatics. The TV watchers and the comic book readers. I will say this. National socialism is the inevitable end product, logically, of evolution. If you believe in evolution, you've got to be a Nazi if you think about it long enough. You can't help it. But what happens is people short-circuit it. The minute they believe in evolution and scientific breeding until they come to that two-legged animal that stands up on its hind legs, then all the rules are up. We say that's not possible. You either believe in the scientific method and the truth, and you apply it to yourself without egotism, or else you don't believe in the scientific method and you're kidding yourself. Nazis believe in ruthless application of the truth, not only to inanimate matter and animals, but to you animals. People, all of us, are the same insofar as we are animals and must survive and live as animals. And unless we breed ourselves better, we're going to get worse. That's what's happening. I do worship nature in that I'm humble. When I see the mighty, awesome power of nature, and believe me, I've seen some terrific power of nature, the typhoons off Japan during the war. Earthquakes. I've been through some tremendous cataclysms on this earth. And compared to them, the atomic bomb is like a firecracker. Nothing. And when you start to think of the enormity of space, our spacemen are just going around at the very bottom levels of space. They're no place yet. There are over 100 million planets where life, just like here, could exist. And in the face of that awesome probability, not possibility, probability, I say it's ridiculous to be egocentric and say we are the center of all things. Everything turns around us. We Nazis are humble. When I look at nature and realize how ignorant and small and feeble and weak and little we are, Nazism is a philosophy of nature, a way of looking at the world. And as I've pointed out, we believe in tribalism. We don't think we're above that. We think that you've got to have pride in your family, pride in your race, pride in your nation. That's not something to laugh at. Patriotism and pride in family and pride in race is something we should be proud of and cultivate, work on, not get rid of. Finally, we believe in morals. We believe in the traditions of goodness, virtue. Now let me, I told you something about what we are, but I'll do as good as I can in telling you what I think our enemies are. And our enemies, make no mistake about it, are the Marxists. The philosophy of Marxism, I believe, is the enemy of all humanity. It's the reverse of humanity. We say communism itself is the most vicious, antisocial doctrine the world has ever known, and here's why. They completely deny the very basis on which any human order can exist at all. Without humans, or at least without civilized humans, you certainly can't have human order. And the communists say they don't believe in race. They believe in absolute equality. The pygmies, the aborigines of Australia, everybody. Send them, let them all come to Carlton, and they'll all write arias and books, and the cannibals will be producing the music and verses. That's all you have to do is educate them. And this simply is not true. This results in chaos, social chaos, which is what we have now. They don't believe in enterprise. They don't believe that people should work for themselves. They believe that the state should come and tell them what to do. They don't believe in private property. They don't believe that you can keep the fruits of your production. They don't have, above all, they have no spiritual ideal. We say the only thing that's worth protecting with your life is ideals and your family, your race, and your nation. And twice in my lifetime, I've been called upon to go out and risk getting killed. And I saw a lot of other young men doing this. Young fanatics that they made out of it, by the way. They made us real fanatic haters of the Germans and fanatic haters of the Japanese. Nobody protested that that was bad to be a fanatic when we were fighting those Japs, and I assure you, we all were. Finally, the communists, if you remember when they first got into Russia, they are against morals. They had free love, no morals at all, everything was have a ball. And the result was they almost tore Russia to pieces. They just fell apart. Now, if you'll notice, they are almost puritanical in Russia. In order to make the thing work, they've had to go back to the very principles of tribalism which we're advocating. You can't work society with a communist pipe dream. Civilization is based on self-sacrifice, on the willingness of men to go out and die for what they believe in. When you get rid of that self-sacrifice, you get anarchy. Civilization is built because I am willing to give up something for my family. And the family is willing to give up something in order to have the town succeed. And the town is willing to give up something so the state can be in business. And the state is willing to give up something so the nation can succeed. Self-sacrifice is the first principle of civilization. Communism has got the fanaticism to destroy you, and it's doing it. And unless you can build up a counter-fanaticism for something you believe in positively, you will be destroyed. You are being destroyed.
Recently, there was a report out that among new babies that were born, this happened last year, minorities were now the majority, that whites were officially the minority.
And they're boasting about it. Khrushchev just said, America's so liberal, they'll never fight. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, but we're going to change that. It won't be quite so liberal. After we've had a chance to make America understand what it is and make it conscious of itself and its greatness and its people, and the white race understand that they're worthy of protecting themselves, that they don't have to keep humbling and downgrading themselves while other races are standing up and saying, look at us, how great we are. We keep saying we're ashamed of ourselves for being white. That's a terrible thing. The thing for each race to do is be proud of itself. And the white people, and the good people of this country, when they finally realize that they can do that without hurting or being obnoxious to anybody else, they will finally become fanatics to survive, to keep this great country going.